I bet you. Tell us about being president of PTA. This is Linden School?
Linden School, yes. I don't know how it happened. I think it happened because I went to the meetings regularly. Somehow they thought somebody who was attending was maybe that interested. I was interested, you know, in my children and in school. And somehow, as I say, I don't know how it happened. I became president, which was maybe much more nerve-wracking than any job I've ever done on stage. I actually had Pledge Allegiance to the flag written out, and I forget what else written out. Robert's Rules I had to learn. It was not a nice time. It was not my thing. You know, there were many girls, I'm sure, that would have loved being president, that probably would have been much better at it than I. But it turned out I was president, and it turned out that the year I was president, or shortly after that, Miss Patterson resigned. I think I did talk about that. And it was interesting. I don't think there's anything you do in life that you don't learn something from and don't gain something from. So I did in working with some of the women in the PTA, and we did make new tablecloths for every occasion because for years they had used the same two unmatching lace tablecloths. So I got my mother, got fabric, we bought burlap, and we did leaves and appliqué leaves on burlap for the fall. We did Valentine's Day tablecloths. We did rather sort of lush ones for end of the year. But that was my big contribution, plus new draperies for the office, because we had a big bake sale. I know what year I was president. It was the year that President Kennedy was elected, because we had a bigger bake sale than they'd ever had, too.
On election day.
On election
day.
Because
they voted there. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's these memories, isn't it?
And I had a nephew born that same day.
Oh, really?
That's how we always remember how old Bruce is, my nephew. And he was born the day President Kennedy was elected.
Tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Three Rivers Arts Festival.
Oh, at its inception, I was the person in charge of contact with the department stores for windows, hoping that they would give us windows and give us space. And it was very small at the time, Gabby. Yeah, it was only, I don't know if you were in Pittsburgh then, it was only, or Beth was, it was just in the one, really, court. It was so easy and so nice at the time. It's gotten so large now that it's probably would require 2 or 3 days to see everything. But then it was just artwork hanging in the kiosks, and it was lovely, and I made a lot of worked with a lot of very nice women on it. You know, there were the usual meetings, four meetings when there could have been, you know, one, two.
I notice here, you know, you've been on the advisory board of Pittsburgh Public Theater, also at its inception.
Yes.
Was that an exciting time?
It was an exciting time. Ben Schachtman.
Right.
Joan Apt was, you know, enormously involved. I mean, she actually is responsible, I think, for. And this had brought Ben Schachtman to town and talked about it about a year before. And then when he came to town, she had us meet him. And he was a very interesting man, really was. And of course, he said at the time, promising anything, oh, yes, we will be using a lot of Pittsburghers. Which then later turned out to be not quite true in its early years. There were very few Pittsburghers, if any, that were used. But they were then gathering money, and I know Helen Rao, who was a wonderful actress here in town. I had Helen here and introduced Ben to her, and it's like a snowball, you know, where then this person meets, that person meets, and eventually they did raise enough money, and we went to the opening night performance, excuse me.
Okay. Anything else about the Pittsburgh Public?
I don't think so. It's grown.
Now tell me, how did that infringe, or I'm looking for a word, too. That's what happens when you get old. the Playhouse? I mean, did it take anything away from the Playhouse?
I don't think so. I think it was a completely professional equity theater that we needed here in town. And the Playhouse has always filled one role. And at the time, the Playhouse was not the important factor that it had been for so many years, when Helen Rao and some of us were actively involved. And I'm not sure of the year, 70, when they tried, Point Park College, really tried to bring it back, and were just semi-successful. But I think public theater has been a wonderful, wonderful addition to the theater scene in Pittsburgh.
How about one on South Side?
Oh, yes.
City Theater.
City Theater.
Have you been involved with that?
No, I haven't been involved, really. And we've been over to performances. Mm-hmm. And the Lester Hamburg Theater there is a wonderful little showcase for, but no, I have not been involved in that.
Do you think there's room in Pittsburgh for all of these?
I do.
Little things.
Yeah, good ones.
Yeah.
And I think City Theater is a particularly good one. I wish I were more knowledgeable about a few of the others that I understand are really good and are doing wonderful work, but I'm not familiar enough, Gabby, at the moment. I'm really not. Because I've been to a lot of the performances that I have heard later were so good and were so wonderful. There are a lot of fabulous people in the city. I just watched a movie the other night that was made here, and Bingo O'Malley and was so good in it. And Helena Rawati played the widow of a policeman, and she was excellent. She's always good. But there's a lot of good talent, not just those two. There's a lot of excellent talent in the city. So I think we're very lucky that way, in that we have the option to go to so many different theaters, and then Civic Light Opera, which I did for early days, and then for Bill Funhurst when he was the producer, and that was an interesting time. It's interesting when you think that they can get an enormous musical comedy ready in actually 5 days. I mean, it's a feat when you think of costuming, people, parts, where you go on stage for what, a three-act musical to get it together. I used to absolutely be in awe of the people who were able to manage it. And Milton Levine, Arnie Devine's brother, and isn't that terrible? I can't think of Milton's, he changed his name from Milton Lyon, was one of the most talented people I've ever known. He came in and was director and conductor because he was enormously talented musically. And of course, most musicians are excellent in mathematics, but he ran rehearsals on the most organized schedule I've ever seen in my life. It was a joy. It was a joy to work with him. And he just passed away. Lived in Princeton, New Jersey, did the Princeton University show for so many years. And I think was terribly underrated, not by a lot of people, but also, unfortunately. And it became a question here, I think, of egos and that we lost him. He wished to be given the title of musical director, and I can't remember what the conflict was about. And instead of giving it to him, which was important to him and would have been a boon to the Civic Light Opera, they chose not to. And so we lost him, but he was incredible. So that was a pleasure.
Well, you sure have interesting stories. And let's talk a little bit about Jewish things.
Yes.
I have my Jewish question here.
Yes.
Now, you've done a lot of volunteer work in the theater and the arts. How about, do you and your husband belong to, what do you belong to?
Rosh Hashanah Temple.
Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you active members?
I would like to say we're active. We're not as active as we should be. And for many years, I was much more active in the sisterhood. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I loved doing the shows. We had a very good time. That's kind of my thing. I can't say that I have done the tedious everyday things that a lot of the ladies have done. But
how about other organizations?
Council. I did all their shows for years and have been semi-active. And Ladies Hospital Aid, I really have never been. I've always been a member. Mm-hmm. I've been a member of all of them. I have not been that active. Did Ladies Hospital Aid shows. UJF used to do all their shows because they used to do some very big productions yearly for the big, I couldn't call it a fundraiser because I think they did that beforehand, but it was, they used to do very big shows at the William Penn, and I can't think of what other, outside of Temple, all the children went to Temple Sunday School, Saturday School, and then Sunday School. And we were married at Temple.
You mentioned that. Oh, you know what I do want to ask about?
Yeah.
About your conversion. Is there anything special that we must know? I mean, what did you
have
to do?
No, it was the most informal kind of conversion. I met with Dr. Freehoff first.
Yes.
And then after that, I met with Rabbi Fearman, and I was given books to read, which I promptly read. And then we had your question and answer. Do I have questions? Do I have... And he had the answers. And then, as I say, my conversion was incorporated into the marriage ceremony, which was lovely, I thought. And I told you my Jewish name is Rojo.
I love it. How do you spell that?
I have no idea.
R-A-C-H-E-L. Okay.
Is that really how it's spelled? Not Rachel, that's Rojo.
Same thing.
Really?
It's a Hebrew pronunciation of Rachel.
Yeah, but they told me it means Ruth.
Well, there's Ruth from it, too.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. Direct,
you know, isn't it wonderful you can get all kinds of things out of one word?
Right. Now, at that time, I don't think they did bar mitzvahs. Was your son bar mitzvah?
No.
I don't think they did it. Was your husband bar mitzvah?
Yes. Yes, because his parents belonged to Beth Sholem. So he was bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. But they only, my children had confirmation. But no, there were no bat mitzvahs or bar mitzvahs then. And I was reading in the paper the other day, the leading rabbi in Israel. Did you read that?
I read that. Crazy. Aren't they crazy?
Please, let's not discuss that.
All right. Okay. Did you have any memorable family vacations?
We had a lot of wonderful family vacations. I can't think of any particularly memorable. I really can't. We used to go to Atlantic City.
Oh, everybody.
Of course, I went to Atlantic City growing up, too. And I haven't been to Atlantic City since the casinos are there. And I imagine it is. Have you been, Gabby? Have you been, Beth? No.
I used to.
Isn't that a shock that we haven't been? See, I just had that terrible curiosity. I'd like to see it. And then I think, oh, all those wonderful old hotels and all those fabulous shops on the boardwalk. Everything about it and the wonderful meals. And it's a whole way of life that's gone. And so, well, we might be able to put 50 cents in a slot machine and come away big winners. I told you I was an optimist.
That's super.
I also play the lottery.
Do you ever win?
No.
Our last question is, but you answered already. If you had to do it over again, is there anything you would have changed?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think. I wonder what percentage of people might say that given that question at one's later age, is there anything you would have changed? I don't think so. You often wonder what if or something, but
sure.
I don't really think there's anything I might have changed. I honestly don't.
How do you find Pittsburgh 1996 compared to
Pittsburgh?
When you came back, when you were first
I think things are so different, Gabby. I don't even think there's any way you can contrast today's way of life with the way of life then. In other words, living, I think it was a very, very secure time. Nobody was afraid, nobody worried. I don't think there were the stresses that is in 1996, the stresses that are in 1996, I should have said. I think today's life, if you permit it, or if you're young today, I think there are enormous stresses placed on young people. I really do. I think it's a pressure to succeed in a very, very fast-paced world. I think it's, I have to say, I am glad I grew up at the time I did, instead of in today's world. I think we're plagued with fanatics, too, in every area of our lives. I think people have become so judgmental. I don't know the reasoning for that, but I think there's an enormous amount of people being, a number of people being judgmental about everything. There's not that live and let live kind of feeling, I don't think. It's what I want, and this is important to me, and please don't step on my, don't rain on my parade.
How about actors? Now, I'm assuming that young people are better trained, I mean, academically trained, more so, or not, or do you have any feelings about that?
Well, it depends on what school, Gabby.
How about Carnegie
Mellon, it's always been more, less academic, and much more geared to the profession. In other words, almost like a technical school, which
still,
I think
is it still that way?
I think so. Uh-huh. The only classes we had to take, other than all those that had to do or pertained to drama, were English and psychology and a language. And that was it. And not at the same time, you know, you could take. So that I think it's geared pretty much that way. I think if you take drama in a different school that is not geared to, that is not strictly for drama, then I think the academic part comes in. And maybe it's better, since so few people make a living at acting, and the median income is so poor. They did a survey of Carnegie Mellon graduates. Did I mention this to you before?
No.
Median income. You were supposed to write down the income that you received only from acting, not from anything else that you did. And the median income 20 years ago, I think, was $2,500 a year.
$2,500
a year.
Yeah.
Today, I think it's only around $6,000. So, in other words, that doesn't mean that those people, there's some making $500,000 and there's some making nothing because they haven't pursued theater or haven't pursued drama. But it's a tough, tough, tough field. It's a very hard field. And young people today, there are many, many more opportunities, though. There's a lot of equity theaters. There's a lot of very good regional theaters. And there's television, which there wasn't. There are industrial shows much more prevalent today than many years ago. There are many, many more opportunities, and yet there are many, many more people pursuing them, too. It's the same as it always was. A friend of mine said to me, the statistics in New York, if you try to get a national commercial, which can be a lifesaver as far as money is concerned, because a national commercial can mean $10,000, $12,000 to you over a year, but you can, for every 40 auditions, you might get one commercial. Well, it's costly, it's hard, it's dressing for whatever is required of the day. So it's a very hard field. It really is. I don't envy. Oh, I do, because it would be fun, you know, to be starting out.
Bess, do you have any questions?
No, not right now. But...
Okay. What is your husband? Okay, what is your husband doing? Earlier, in last tape, he was went from Kaufman's to Horn's. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Right. Yes. Now, that's many years ago. I think it was in... Wait till I think. He went from... he went to Kaufman's in 1946, and was there for 18 years, and as drapery buyer and furniture assistant, merchandise manager, and then went to Horns and became senior vice president at Horns. And then he retired from Horns about 12 years ago, when it was Horns and not Lazarus. And since then, he's worked for a friend who had a distributing company. The friend has since died, but my husband is still there. And he calls it sometimes busy work, but he's been very valuable to them.
And this is also furniture?
No, it's not. It's they distribute appliances and that kind of, was an appliance distributing business. But he's very important to them, and they let him know that. He's wonderful with the younger employees, and he's been really in the, so valuable. It's, yes, it's Hamburg Brothers, but he's been so valuable in being a an advisor to the younger workers, to their benefit and to the benefit of the company. So he's he enjoys it too. He enjoys working with the young people, as everyone does. It's interesting to have the viewpoints today of, but nobody's lives are easy today, I don't think, in the young people in the working world. Girls with children who, and when it's economically necessary that they work, I think it's awfully hard, whether you have a husband or you don't, even with two incomes. Sometimes it's very difficult for, and we hear about the stories of people my husband with daycare and trying to, everything is difficult, I think. And usually it's economics. And but young girls, and I see them in the neighborhood getting ready to go to work and taking the children, infants, either to daycare or they have someone to come in to care for them. And I do think that was much easier when we were, because not so many of us worked.
Well, what did you do when you worked? Well, who took care of your children?
I always worked part-time, Gabby. Excuse me, and I'm fortunate enough to have wonderful women working for me, either on
in the home.
Mm-hmm. In the home. That's another thing that's very difficult today. It was much easier then. And but as I say, I didn't have to worry with full time. I mean, with 7 o'clock in the morning too. Because I never worked on a regular basis and always on a part-time basis. And if I ran into any problem, I had my mother or my mother-in-law. So I was very fortunate in that way to have family in town. But some of the people today moving to Pittsburgh don't have family they can count on. They don't have anybody they can count on. So it's hard.
Yeah. All right. Tell us about the old play. It was not a social thing.
It was. There was the restaurant downstairs that Frank Blandy ran.
Okay. And who's Frank Blandy?
And Frank Blandy went on then to have Park Shenley. And then his nephew, and I think Frank was involved too in the restaurant on the Mount Washington. And but it was, everybody went to the Playhouse. They had dinner. Went to see a show, or went to see a show and then went downstairs afterwards to have a snack. And I used to have that wonderful, isn't that awful? I can't remember the name of the sandwich that everybody ordered.
Oh, I know what you mean. Devonshire. Uh-huh. I think he invented
Turkey Devonshire,
didn't he?
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
Turkey Devonshire. Uh-huh. And when I was doing a show and working at Gimbel's at the same time, I remember I used to come out, have dinner, do the show, and then get my streetcar back home, and those were long days, and it's nice that you only are called upon to do that when you're young. because I don't think I could have be functioning today with working all day and then taking a train into work and working all day, and then and my mother was caring for my son, so.
Now, did the Playhouse at that time have two theaters or just one?
One.
One.
It was only the one building. And Helen Rao's husband, Richard Rao, had taken an option on property that's now the, not the Holiday Inn, but the Howard Johnson's Motel. He bought that property and was going to build a play, a new playhouse there. And the plans for that, I don't remember just exactly what happened or why that fizzled out, but he was going to build it for Helen, and who starred in so many of the productions at the Playhouse and was an excellent actress. We were very good friends.
Richard Rao is being interviewed currently.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. That's you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think mm-hmm. so. Mm-hmm. The one, I don't know.
Richard him. And Helen's only
yes.
son.
Right. Uh-huh. Right, and he's Dick. Got documents and documents.
Oh, I can imagine he has from the mm-hmm. Playhouse yes. and from Helen's years. Yes. And, he must have mm-hmm. an enormous amount of good things.
I'm not involved with it, but I know.
Oh, that would be interesting. Uh-huh. She was an interesting personality. And so was Richard, her husband. They were both, but he was besotted with her. He was 27 years older.
That's
and
right.
besotted with her. And it was nice. I mean, he really treated her like a princess, shall we say, queen.
So when did the Point Park College take that up?
Early, I would say, 69, 70, somewhere around there.
And prior to that,
it was... tried very hard to bring it back. They really did. And then it became, I think, somewhat of a financial drain. I probably have this information all, except this was my impression of what was happening at the time. They were trying to bring it back, but do it with the minimum investment. And then, of course, they ended up spending a lot of money buying the building next door. And wasn't that the old synagogue?
Tree of Life.
And having the other theater, and I think it got to be a financial drain. So it's still functioning and still in business and still doing...
They do a lot of children's plays.
Yes, children's plays. It's always been a wonderful children's theater. And they also do the Point Park dance groups there. And there's some excellent talent. And Point Park has become a very good school for drama and for dance. So...
Hey, tell us about Carnegie Salutes Carnegie.
Oh, Carnegie Salutes Carnegie was an enormous production that was being done to salute Carnegie. And I don't know whether it was an anniversary. I can't really remember. But there were a number of people coming in from California at the time to do it. Some of the people who had been on the police show that Stephen Bochco had done. And Stephen Bochco's wife was coming in to do it.
And now this is Carnegie Salutes
Carnegie
Mellon.
It was called, yes.
Right, right.
And there was a whole production office set up in the school. And Bobby Finkel had his usual enormous staff come in, including one of his daughters. And it was done at the Civic Arena. You know, they brought trailers in for all the guest stars, and Jerry Lewis came in to do it. Andy, who's the wonderful singer? Andy Williams came in, and a lot of the Carnegie Mellon Drama School alumni were in the show, and also from the music school singers. Trying to think who all. They had the arena set up with tables, and also then seats all around. It was an enormous stage and big, big production.
When was this?
And it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I can't remember the exact year now. And Bobby called me and said if I was available, he'd like me to do some fancy title. I can't remember what it was now. What I was in charge of was directing the opening and closing the show, where we had coming in from every entry of the Civic Arena talent.
An old Carnegie Mellon talent.
And then, yes, and then congregating on the stage for this enormous opener and then for an enormous closing. And it was fun. It was an interesting time. And Janie Finkel, Bobby's wife, flew in from California. And in the basement of the Civic Arena, they had all the dressing rooms set up and bands. And also they had trailers brought in for the personal use of some of the talent. And it was a big show. And it was, the tickets were quite expensive. I don't remember now what they were charging for tickets, but it was quite expensive. And I assume the money went back to Carnegie Mellon. At the moment, I can't remember.
I vaguely remember now, as you told me. I think it was an anniversary, some 100th anniversary.
And there was...
Couldn't have been 100, yeah. But...
There was at the time, rather ugly, just to add a little spice to an occasion. Some of the talent, Charlie Hayde. Can't remember all of the names. There was Rene Auberjonois.
Right.
There was... I'm trying to think now who were the dissenters who were in a very ugly way, flew in at the expense of Carnegie Mellon, were given a limousine, were given rooms at various hotels in town, and then proceeded